Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and the Seahawks are coming off their fourth loss of their season. They just dropped the game just yesterday to the Los Angeles Chargers, 25-17. The score probably doesn't indicate how much better the Chargers looked than the Seahawks yesterday. But we'll get into the game. We'll get into the offensive side, defensive side, special teams, and game balls as always. But before we get into the whole show, we'll do a quick intro. Now, I'm Grant Goldberg. I co-host this Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. And Spike is a writer with The Stranger. And I guess we can begin with the offense, Spike, and we both, are in agreement that, Russell Wilson was dreadful yesterday. It was one of, I think one of the worst games, in recent memory that he's had, ever since probably he's become this top 10, top 8 quarterback. It was a stinker of a performance, and I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on how he played and how crazy in the end the Seahawks had a chance to win this game.
Yeah, I guess there's a part of me that's he was bad. Russell Wilson, let's start there. The Seahawks offense took a big step back this week, and I think it was a combination of injuries, Russell Wilson, and the revenge of Schottenheimer all being a confluence of problems for this team. I think Russ's performance was, by his standards, by any standards, not good. That pick six is really ugly. He missed a couple throws that he just should have had. The pace wasn't there, and it's tough to assign whether that's to Schottenheimer or whether that's to Russ. But either way, it was limiting the team. That said, at the end of the game, it did feel wow, we're going to drive down the field. I wasn't concerned, although it did take some pretty questionable penalties to get us all the way down the field and a couple fourth down conversions to give us those chances at the end to tie up the game. I don't know, players that aren't Aaron Rodgers, and even Aaron Rodgers this year, if you watched his game yesterday, he didn't look great. Quarterbacks have bad games. Russ has bad games. Russ having a bad game, and I think he did, it doesn't knock me off my assessment of Russell Wilson, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is a good quarterback who is capable of having bad games. How many picks did Roethlisberger throw against the Jaguars last year? 74? And obviously the Chargers aren't the Jaguars. They're an okay defense. And Russ just missed some throws that were there. But, I don't know. Whatever. I guess, that's the silver lining. It's I don't know. Yeah, if you're not peak Peyton Manning, you have games like this. And it's just unfortunate the timing of it at the beginning of a run of really difficult games, while it felt like the Seahawks were making a move, and while the Chargers' offense in the second half really didn't do much, which gave the Seahawks a chance to win a game in which they were outplayed for the middle 40 minutes of the game pretty comprehensively.
Yeah. I think Russell Wilson, he's shown enough consistency. He's had enough great performances that, yeah, this isn't worth worrying about whether it's going to be a long-term issue. But just the misses that he had were unfortunate. Like you said, the pick six looked really bad.
It's the second one he's
thrown to that sideline, and teams are catching
the
on.
The first one we get Amukamara was in single coverage, and he just read the play. He knew what the play was, and he beat the play. It's well, that sucks. That's terrible play calling. There were two defenders there. Russ should not have sent the ball in that direction. There was no even if you're at best you could be he thought it was just tight single cover. There was nothing there, and then he didn't put a lot of zip on the ball. It was really bad. It was when the ball left his hands, I literally said, oh no, before it was even picked. And I don't do that with Russ very often. It was crazy. Graham, yeah. What the heck?
Yeah, no, he just looked off, and I it the rhythm of the offense, like you were saying, it just wasn't there. Chris Carson went down, I think like midway through the second quarter, and he is an important player to this offense. I wouldn't argue that he's the second most important player behind Russ, but
Oh boy. People got take. People got take.
There's something to be said about the skill and just how quality of a player Chris Carson is. I think a lot of credit goes to the offensive line for this jump that they've made, and they still looked good yesterday. But it takes a good combination of a good offensive line and a good runner, and I think that's what Chris Carson is. He shows enough patience, enough explosiveness, and he's really hard to bring down. And so I think that even when the offensive line isn't blocking their best, he can still make something. There's still something there for Chris Carson to take from a run. And so I think that's what the Seahawks were missing in Mike Davis yesterday. Although he's a good traditional runner, but
Davis was
he's
fine.
he's
I
fine.
don't know.
But
There was like a lot of. I mean, he missed that blitz pickup really badly.
yeah.
But I just want to throw this out. Like, there was a similar. And the reason it was so bad is because Russ saw the blitz coming and like pointed to it, and then Davis just missed the block. There was a similar play in the Patriots game last night where like Brady got the Packers to show their blitz package, pointed at the dude, and he still destroyed. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
No,
Like,
like I wasn't about to pile on Mike Davis, but like
okay.
it's clear
I
it
know. Hashtag Davis Division,
yeah,
please.
hashtag Davis Division. That's already known. It doesn't need to be said. But there's something missing when you take a step from Carson to Davis, and I think that's what we saw yesterday. But
100%. Yeah, like
as
I also I just want to say like the counter thing of like, yeah, Chris Carson's not the second most important player on the offense, but his injury set the team back. Like, it
yeah.
was a problem. Like, he's been very, very good this year, and our team is overcommitted to the run, so losing a very, very good running back is a problem. And I also want to say like the inactives were a huge problem this
Oh,
week.
yeah.
I mean, we'll get to it on defense, but not having Ethan Posick available when DJ Fluker got hurt and having to play Joey Hunt at guard for the bulk of the second half was a problem. And like a couple, like there was a late sack of Russ where people were like, oh, that's an indefensible sack. But I'm like, yo, Joey Hunt got exploded. Russ had no time to work. Like, sometimes you get beat, but like we beat ourselves with our active day roster. And I'm just gonna drop my hot take. The NFL should have the whole roster be active every game. This dumb. It's the reason that there are inactives is so that like cheap teams can save money by not replacing injured players. Like, it's nonsense. Like,
Yeah.
teams should be able to have all of their players on the field, because otherwise you end up with plays like Bradley McDougal on the field with a knee injury because Maurice Alexander is inactive, and so we got to get another guy suited up. And it's just like, come on. Like, if the NFL cares about player safety, which
Exactly.
obviously they don't, but like, you've got to let there be 30, you have 53 active players.
Yeah,
Anyway.
no, there's more than enough money to go around when you talk about NFL owners, and then they say there's such a focus on player safety, but yeah, precautionary measures like having more active players aren't taken. And so yeah, I agree. I don't even think that's such a hot take. But yeah.
Thanks.
And so as much as I've talked about Russell Wilson, as much as I talked about Chris Carson, I think a lot of the blame goes to Brian Schottenheimer for not adapting the play calling throughout most of the game. And like we were saying, like we were bound for a game where Schottenheimer falls back to earth, and he kind of fell so hard that he bounced off the ground. And adding that with Russell Wilson not being sharp, injuries, then you get a performance like that. And it was still incredible that it came down to the last play and
And there were some insane,
another tip ball.
game flow killing penalties too. I just want to throw that out there. Like,
I cannot believe we've gotten this far in the show without talking about how horrible the refs were
yeah.
yesterday.
I mean, part of it was that we came back into the game because of the refs. Like, Hockley made some terrible calls against the Chargers late to like literally just like be like, all right, I guess the Seahawks get 15 bonus yards every play now. Like that roughing pad, the roughing call on Melvin Ingram was shockingly soft. But I'll tell you know, like after Mike Williams stepped out of bounds and they gave him a touchdown, after the OPI that wasn't an OPI at all, like it was just like brutal all game. And Sean Hockley sucked. Like he was bad by Pac-12 standards. He's crazy.
That's probably the most condemning thing you can say about an NFL referee is that they're bad by Pac-12 standards. But yeah, I have a theory about that Mike Williams touchdown that they just looked at the beginning of when he was on the sideline and he didn't really step, or it wasn't really definitive
My
whether.
theory is that he couldn't, is that since no white chalk came up, he was unwilling to say definitively his heel touched. And that's why, because he said the call stands, not like the call is right or whatever. You know, it's like, whatever. I hate Sean Hockley now. And like, and it's like, at first I was like, oh, he's biased against Seahawks. This is insane. And I was like, no, he's not. This is just terrible.
No, he's just bad. Like, and he was so bad
Oh,
that
and
it
there's the
looked.
non-roughing call on Russ earlier. Like, it was like, yeah, like, oh, we got all these makeup calls in a row at the end, but it's like, man, just call it right in the first place.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You'd expect better from a professional referee. And I always say too, is that referees are in a position where maybe sometimes they aren't going to get the call right. We expect players to be perfect and they aren't perfect sometimes. And I think we should look at referees like that sometimes. But it was just inexcusable yesterday. There was
Yeah,
too
this
many
wasn't
bad
bad.
calls, too many
And we
missed.
haven't done that much this year. I think we've only had one game where the calls were bad so far this year, and like it was like fun. Like this was a throwback to some nonsense.
Yeah, no, I typed out a tweet and deleted it, but when you look at this year's Seahawks team, they aren't as penalized as other teams in the past, but the penalties they do get sort of seem to be the ones that just shift the game or have just a high chance of shifting the game because obviously they can come back from the penalty, but oftentimes they're drive killers or they extend the drive for the other team. So
Yeah.
it's just a theory.
I just want to say one thing before we wrap up the offensive talk, which is there was like a moment during the broadcast where basically the sideline reporter was like, yeah, the Chargers are just going all in. Like the Chargers are just pushing all in on defending the run on first down every. And it was just like, yeah. And like the fact that we weren't going play action first down more. And then when we did late in the game, it worked, even though they knew we couldn't run, although we did run some late. Like, it was just like, come on. Like, oh, it was so frustrating.
Oh,
Very frustrating.
that bad clock management too late in the fourth
Oh,
quarter. That was
buddy.
frustrating. And
Woo,
so
talk about
we'll move away from this. There's a lot more time another day to talk about that and how they need to execute better in those situations. But for right now, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. Ever since we started this podcast, people have been asking us for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week, and the truth is, we don't know who's gonna win. But if you think you know, you gotta check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with, and that's why we always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust us, they are the best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, they have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service that's been good to us, and so Spike is the same way. And so go with my bookie. You win, you get paid. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over/under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and my bookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate their offer. To match your first deposit dollar for dollar. That's MyBookie, MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to claim your bonus when you make a deposit. You play, you win, you get paid. And we are back with more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And for as much as we talked about the offense, early in the game, it seemed like the Chargers just got whatever they wanted from the Seahawks defense. And the Seahawks pulled it together a little bit more in the second half. But just to see the Chargers go 94 yards down the field and have, other lengthy drives and get explosive plays, it was kind of, the same kind of regression to the mean for the defense as there was for the offense for as good as they were playing. It was an incredibly frustrating game. It was closer than it ended with. It was closer than the score led on because of how bad Caleb Sturgis is at kicking the football. But yeah, the Seahawks held it together in the second half, which is surprising given how poorly they played in the first.
Yeah, and it isn't just that. Well, okay, so Philip Rivers is real good right now, and Keenan Allen is real good. He had an incredible game. His route running was absolutely top notch. Melvin Gordon got his to a degree, and they had that one drive where we had him at third and long, and then they hit two explosives and scored a touchdown and cover 80 yards in two plays. Other than that, though, like I was okay with our defense's performance. I mean, especially with Bradley McDougal getting hurt, Delano Hill coming in, for the defense to stiffen and hold. I mean, the Chargers should have gotten 3 offensive points in the second half. Sturgis was just, I mean, truly atrocious. Or wait, no, did they have a field goal attempt that he missed? Was that in the second
That
half
was
or
in
was
the
that in the
first
first
half.
half?
That was in the first
Okay,
half.
so they shouldn't have had any points. I mean, that's incredible, especially given that we didn't turn them over, that we held the Chargers offense to 0 points in the second half. It's just truly astonishing. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Jaron Reed, Bobby Wagner. The run defense really stiffened. It was bad in the first half. It was unlike what we'd seen all year, but they really got their gap integrity back in place, and holes that were there in the first half just weren't in the second half. Tackling was way better. Justin Coleman stepped up his game. Trey Flowers stepped up his game. I mean, I was just really impressed with the adjustments the Seahawks made in the second half against a very good offense. And if it weren't for that pick six, we'd have been driving to win the game down the stretch. Now, mind you, we would have taken more time and we would have still been driving to tie the game because our team is insane when it comes to clock management. But, like, a lot of credit to the defense against a really, really good Chargers offense. Like, that offense, it won't be the best we play this year because we still have to play the Chiefs and the Rams. Jesus Christ. But, like, man, like, I don't know. Like, I took away a bunch of positives. The pass rush started getting home in the second half. Like, we tired, we still had energy. We were fresh late. I got a lot of questions about Puna Ford and Nos Jones being deactivated, but at the end of the game, it didn't really matter. The defense played pretty well. I don't know. What do you, I, yeah, I don't know. I'm
And
impressed.
overall, I'd say that the defense was the reason that the Seahawks were still in the game. The offense was, putrid in the way they operated for
Yeah.
most of the second half. And yeah, I'd say that, I was most impressed if I had to pick, well, if I had to pick one player, from going from the first half to the second half was Trey Flowers. He made incredible adjustments and he had a touchdown saving pass breakup, in the
Yeah.
second half.
Man, and he was so close to breaking up that touchdown they did get on him. That was such good coverage. It's just he got,
Yeah.
Philip Rivers is just incredible.
Yeah, no, he looked, as good as ever. Just like we were saying, leading up to the game, he looked, really, really good. Best in his career. But, I'd say one of the biggest plays was Bradley McDougal breaking up that 2-point conversion attempt. Because that's,
Yeah.
ultimately it led the Seahawks to, have a shot to score a touchdown and then go for two. Obviously, they didn't get it, but, there's these, little plays that, you don't really think, have a big significance, when they happen. But, looking back on it, that play, where he broke up the 2-point conversion, Trey Flowers' touchdown, that he broke up, and then just, subtle things like Jaron Reed's big sack in the fourth quarter, like,
Yeah.
that helped a lot with field position. And I think that, if not for that, we probably don't have a chance to drive all the way down the field, because I think that the Chargers would probably go for it if they got close on fourth down. And so yeah, it's there's just these plays where they just add up and ultimately keep the team in the game, if not for just a weird performance from the offense. And they were kind of set up for failure with the way it was called. And I think that we could be talking about a different result. But the Chargers were better than the Seahawks for too much of the game for the Seahawks to ultimately pull off that comeback.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a really, really good Chargers offense, and we saw it, but we also saw why this is a really good Seahawks defense. But really what we saw is right now in the NFL, good offense beats good defense. We saw it, you know, we've seen it all year. Like, having a good defense isn't enough to win games right now. It doesn't matter how good your defense is if you're up against an elite team. And Phillip Rivers in this Chargers offense is elite right now. So, you know, like, it calls into question some of the bigger roster construction strategy issues with the Seahawks team, which is they don't want to be the most explosive offense they can be. They want to be a steady offense with a dominant defense. That's not how you win games in the NFL right now. And I think that's some of the frustration, is it feels like if we just got it together mentally and, like, just accepted the realities of this new NFL where, you know, like, it doesn't matter how fundamentally sound your cornerback play is if they're giving, you know, if, like, if you can basically scheme dudes open constantly in the middle of the field. So I don't know. Like, I'm in a weird, weird position with this, which is, like, I'm really impressed with how the Seahawks young defensive talent is developing. I'm impressed with the scheme. I'm impressed with what Pete Carroll's done. I'm impressed with that second half performance. Keeping the Chargers to 19 offensive points is a big, big deal. And it kind of doesn't matter in the end. Defense, it's almost like the NBA, where defense is just to give your offense a chance to win. Like, you got to get enough W's on defense to give yourself a chance. Seahawks defense did that this week, and they did it without Bradley McDougal for a lot of the second half. So I'm impressed with the defense's performance, and I bet DVOA will be as well. I bet they don't slide in DVOA on defense after going up against an opponent like that and putting together a performance like that.
Yeah, we can only hope, because we know how
that's
how
all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. How close the Seahawks fan base holds DVOA to their heart.
I mean, we could be the number one DVOA defense this year, and if so, we got to put another banner up.
We got another banner up. It's the rules. They're required to if they take the crown this year. But we'll take a short break. We'll come right back with more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. Stay tuned. And we are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And we are going to do the game balls. We're going to look ahead to the Seahawks schedule after these games. And so, you know,
before we talk game balls, I guess we can start with, can we just start with our special team game balls?
Yeah, we'll start with our special team game balls. And I think I know who you're going to give it to.
I kind of want to give it to Caleb Sturgis, but it's got to go to Dicko. It's got to go to Michael Dixon, who had a unbelievable game. Seattle's not an easy place to punt. He was destroying the Chargers, kicking to the absolute edge of the coverage, especially without Nico Thorpe in the game, to be kicking right to the edge where you're like, ooh, did he outkick the coverage? Nope, we hit him right there. And what did he average, like 56 yards a punt? I mean, it was awesome. Dicko's back. Whatever little blip he had where he shanked like three punts earlier this year, it's over. Now that he's running Dicko, he's the best punter in the league. LeBron James, activate. He's the best. Amazing.
And the amount of hang time he had on the kicks, yeah, too. That's what kept, because he had the distance, but, you know, in order for him to, you know, not kick out kick his coverage, he had to have the perfect amount of hang time on the balls, and that's what he had. And another masterclass from Michael Dixon when it comes to punting. And then I think we should give a game ball to Caleb Sturgis, because, you know, as much as we made of the Seahawks defense playing well and keeping the Seahawks in the game, Caleb Sturgis also did his best to keep the Seahawks in the game. He missed a field goal. He missed two extra points. And, so we thank Caleb Sturgis, who, you know, unfortunately for his sake, was cut this morning by the Chargers. And
He was? I didn't see that.
Yeah, so, as a consolation, we'll give you a game ball because you don't have an NFL contract right now. I'll give out the first offensive game ball, and that'll go to, oh man, this is rough. I'm gonna not give it to anybody this week. I don't think there was any
real
I don't think there was any real
Wow.
standout performance. I mean, maybe Dwayne Brown.
Wow.
Dwayne Brown can get a game ball
Yeah.
because he
Dwayne
played.
Brown was really good.
He's just super solid. He wasn't really, you know, anything to worry about on Sunday, and yeah, anything that really presented the Seahawks with issues came off the right side of the line. And
Yeah.
so, you know, whether that be on Mike Davis on his blitz pickup, or you know, having to try as hard as you can to contain Melvin Ingram. And so, yeah, there's different points in the game where you have to just really look at things and look at what you had to worry about in the game. And I think Dwayne Brown wasn't one of those things, so I'll give him one of the game balls.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it to the wide receiving core for A, that incredible celebration, and B, they were still fine. I mean, Russ missed a bunch of throws, and that David Moore drop at the end, I mean, that's tipped. And you know, like, it sucks that he didn't haul it in, even though it was tipped. He did that last week against the Lions.
He did
I
that
mean, the margin,
twice this week.
David Moore.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying he dropped the one in the end zone
Oh,
at the end
yeah.
of the game. But it was tipped. I'm just saying that's not a pure drop.
Oh,
If it
no.
hits his hands after it hits a defender's hands, like, you gotta be cool. So I'm gonna give it to the receivers. Great celebration. They did fine in the face of adversity. I don't know. It's mostly just a celebration. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'd say for defense, we can give it to Bobby Wagner. I'll give it to Bobby Wagner
I'm gonna
because,
go Jay Reed, Jaren Reed.
well, I think Jaren Reed's impact was mostly in the second half when you know the pass rush did start to get home and they started to you know really close down the run coverage. But Bobby Wagner's just super solid. You know, I think it's a Dwayne Brown style game ball that I just gave out that. Like he had some crazy pass breakups during the game, but he was a sure tackler in the run game. Did really well in coverage, and was you know he did his part. He played, I think most if not all of Seattle snaps on defense, and so
How
yeah.
many sacks did Bobby Wagner have at the end of the game to give the Seahawks a chance to win?
Oh man, I'll have to count. I don't know if I can count it on my fingers.
Go back, watch the tape, eat the tape, Grant. You gotta eat the
Watch
tape.
the tape, chump. No, but yeah, Bobby Wagner played 100% of the snaps. Jaren Reed
Yeah, Bobby
played
Wagner's
88.
amazing.
88
Yeah,
snaps.
that's a good amount of snaps for a defensive tackle. I'm just whatever. I mean, obviously Bobby Wagner, we talk, I give Bobby Wagner game balls all the time. He's amazing. Jaren Reed had a good game. And we throttled Melvin Gordon in the second half and he got a big sack. So I don't know.
All
I
right.
wish Trey Flowers had broken up that one touchdown pass in the first half. It would have been him.
Yeah, it would have. Bradley McDougald also a candidate for playing hurt when he didn't have to. Well, no, he literally had to. But we're gonna take a look ahead real quick. I think this is a game that
Oh.
we didn't really talk about when we mentioned the Chiefs and we mentioned the Rams. The Carolina Panthers, I think, is going to be a really tough game. Traveling cross country to play that team at 10 a.m. Oof, I like if you look at the term schedule loss, and I think maybe that's one of those schedule losses. They're playing really,
They're
really well right now.
we're in trouble, man. Our next game is in LA, then it's on 4 days rest against Aaron Rodgers, and then it's in Carolina, right? Like, that's what's happening. It's not great.
The Seahawks are gonna have to show like really no, they're gonna have to be sharp. They're gonna have to fire on all cylinders during all of these games.
Honestly,
They have to
no,
sweep.
they don't have to sweep.
No,
That's crazy. They're gonna.
I was gonna no, you didn't let me finish. They're gonna have to sweep the 49ers and Cardinals, I was gonna
Oh,
say.
I was like, oh my God, Grant.
And they're gonna have to
Oh, the opt.
win a few of these games.
Yeah, they will have to win two, maybe three of their five difficult games left that are against the Rams, Packers, Panthers, Vikings, and Chiefs. The Packers and Vikings are just okay, but they're very scary. We saw what the Vikings defense can do today against Detroit. Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. The Chiefs are a good matchup for us, but they're incredible. The Rams and Panthers are bad matchups for us and better teams. So we need to win at least two, maybe three of those. And yes, we do need to sweep the newly rejuvenated 49ers with Nick Mullins. Oakland can rejuvenate anybody. I'm not worried. I'm not worried.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to stop and end the show for the day. So, you know, thank you guys for listening. We appreciate all the reviews on iTunes. I believe
Oh,
we got a
we
new
have.
one.
Yeah, we've got. We'll do mailbag questions tomorrow. So leave a review today if you want your question answered tomorrow. We still have like a backlog, I think, of two questions, right?
Yeah, which is crazy to
Yeah.
say because we never have a backlog of questions.
We're gonna do maybe.
But yeah, we did actually get a review recently, and I'm pulling it up right now. But we want to thank you guys, and always suggest that you leave reviews because you know that's the best way to let us know that you're a fan of the show. And so yeah, we always appreciate it. Reach out to us on Twitter. It's at Grant Goldberg, at Spike Friedman. The show's Twitter is at Lock Seahawks. Spike, do you have anything to say while I look up this review?
You know, tomorrow's a big election. If you live in Washington, you should vote. If you live in California, like I do, you should also vote. If you follow my Twitter feed, you'll know how I want you to vote, but that this is not the place for that. Generally, just go out and do your voting. In Washington, you get mail-in ballots, drop them off, buy a stamp. If you don't want to buy a stamp, tweet at me. I'll Venmo you 48 cents or whatever.
Right, and yeah, it's important. It's your civic duty. So go ahead and do it. Yeah, and our review is from JFly180. He says, "Grant and Spike do a great job representing the Seahawks with little bias, very informative and incredibly enjoyable. Thanks, guys." Thank you,
J Fly.
JFly180. You know, we've done a 180 on the optimism from the early part in this season to right now, but we always appreciate your reviews, so go ahead and leave them. And for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.